So this is an old 70s one that I bought in a sample cell. So that's my oldest one, which I think is really lovely.
And why did you buy it, this one?
I think because for me it typified that kind of Laura Ashley look. Like, I like the fact it's almost a man's shirting type fabric with that striped jacquard.
Yeah.
And I just love all the tucks and the ruffles. And I think it's got little puff sleeves, or it's got at least got this little sort of ruffly cuff, which I think is really sweet, which I really like.
Did you buy it? was there a sample cell in the company?
In the company. Yes. Well, I don't think that was meant to be in the sample cell, and I recognised it as an old 70s one, and I thought, I'm going to have that. I didn't want it to kind of just go to anyone else that wouldn't recognise the beauty of it. And then I've got some of the ones that I designed when I was there. So this
is
from...
Did you use it as inspiration then?
Yeah. And I used to wear it as well. I used to quite like wearing it like with a man's suit or something, which was the thing that I did when I was at Laura Ashley. And I used to love the three-tiered skirts and things. And again, I would wear them, but with a suit jacket. So I was really kind of into it. And these are some of the ones that I designed. So this would have been from the early 90s, I think. But you can see it's got that kind of Laura Ashley-esque
thing about it. Heavily influenced by this one?
Gosh, it's quite hard to remember. I just know I particularly loved a ruffle shirt. So these are some other ones that I designed. I didn't actually realise that I had quite so many, so... When I went upstairs, I remembered that one, because I remember I used to wear that one in your hand, and the old 70s one I used to wear. And then these are other sort of samples that I had. I mean, we might not use these, but I thought I'd bring what I found.
And are these from the 90s too?
So these, yes, are all my designs from the 90s. So they would have been probably from about 93, 94, something like that.
And did you design this sort of like, this is applique, is it? Or is that part of the fabric?
I think it's applique.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's applique. So I just sort of would select the different lace trimmings. So at the time, we used to always use, kind of often with we use sort of Swiss lace. So they were quite expensive garments at the time. But by this stage in the 90s, I seem to remember the shirts were made in Hong Kong, so we used to make the dresses still in the UK, but things like these shirts with all the pintuck work we used to make in Hong Kong. Okay. I used to wear this linen one as well. It's interesting, isn't it? And so you can see there I've got the safari pockets and the little ruffle and pintuck.
And did you design
that? I designed that one, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I should launder them and wear them again, actually.
They're beautiful.
I know, I haven't got them out for years, like 20 years or more, I've not got them out. So I left in 1995, so they've not been out of the trunk since then.
Really?
They've moved with me, because I love them. And somewhere in the house, but I'm not quite sure where, I've got the big skirts, because I used to love the tiered skirts, so I know I've got some
floral
somewhere.
Floral
fabrics.
I
know, I don't know where they are. Yeah, again, I haven't looked at them for years. I thought that they'd be in the trunk, because there was one in particular I loved, which was, it wasn't floral, it was indigo linen with a navy paisley print.
Right.
So it was really quite subtle, and I remember wearing that one. The others I just kept, because they're interesting.
Yeah.
But the indigo one I used to wear.
Yeah.
It was linen, so I used to like it crumpled and un-ironed, you know. So I used to do things like go to the Bath, you know, the antique market in Bath, and I used to buy up old Victorian nightdresses and shirts and things to get the details and the pintuck settings and that kind of thing from that.
Yeah.
Which again was what I loved about working there, because you really felt you were designing, because you always went to the original source, whether it was an old Laura Ashley garment or you were going to Bath to go to an antique market, or you'd go to Portobello Road or something and try and find a really interesting detail.
And what are your associations with these now, do you think? Because they're very consistent, aren't they?
They are. I mean, I still love them.
Yeah.
I still love them. And I would wear them. I still absolutely love them. And I think it's... I find intriguing as a woman of colour, this idea of wearing something that is so associated with Englishness, this kind of high neck, leg of mutton sleeve shirt. I find that really intriguing because at the time I hadn't seen photographs. I know that you can find that now in, you know, the Smithsonian Archive or even at Autograph with, you know, the Black Chronicles exhibition. You can see photographs of black people in this kind of Victorian dress. Yeah, yeah. But when I was doing this in the 90s, I hadn't really seen that.
Yeah.
So for me, there was something very... looking back, I would say it was kind of political.
Yeah.
It felt like a statement to be wearing them and also to wear them in the way that I did, where I would break that kind of uber femininity or that stereotypical femininity by wearing a suit jacket or wearing, you know, big sort of Oxford bag trousers or something with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I quite like that kind of mix of different elements.
Yeah.
Yeah, playing with the idea of Englishness.
I mean, what are the references? I kind of think of like Thomas Hardy, but maybe that's incorrect. Maybe that's periodic. Maybe that's not the right period. Thomas Hardy was what, like mid-19th century or something?
Yeah, and also I think that it had... because I think it's a little bit Edwardian lady, isn't it? Yeah. Diary of an Edwardian Lady kind of thing, as well as being Victorian. So I think it's earlier. We did used to do things like go to see... period dramas, whether it was Pride and Prejudice, we would go to the cinema.
Yeah,
I mean, it was kind of, you know, we would go to the cinema and watch these things, we would go to the V&A and go to exhibitions and, you know, get books on, I don't know, Georgian dress or whatever. It was all about period costume.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the Pride and Prejudice moment with Mr. Darcy emerging from the pond, or it was emerged from. So I remember looking, we all looked at that and we would follow that to look at the details and so on. And Mrs. Ashley had an archive, so there was an archive in Wales, so we would look at garments, we would look at the patchwork quilts, and inspiration would come from that.
And Mrs. Ashley, who was she?
I don't remember. Laura Ashley, so when did she pass away? She died before I joined the business, so I started working there maybe 1990, something like that, and I think she just died.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes we would go and have design weeks in her, in the family home.
Right.
Which was always quite fun, because so you were surrounded by all of their things, you know, and... you know, she used to do, is it decoupage where you have the, decoupage, where you have the magazine and newspaper cuttings and you put them onto furniture and screens.
Decoupage. Oh, right.
So you sort of see her kind of, decorating an object by gluing coloured paper and cutouts. Yeah, so she used to do that. So about the house, there'd be these things that you'd also get inspiration from. So that was always interesting to go and sort of rock up at the house for a design week. And the whole team would go and we would just be holed up in the house for, you know, a couple of days, almost a week.
Yeah.
And that was really nice. And we'd build the concept boards for the season there. I've got a very vague memory of being in the conservatory. Yeah. It was a bit like a commune in a way because we used to cook. It was nice. I really enjoyed it. So we used to cook and sort of eat together and just spend a few days just really focusing on building the boards.
Was it mostly women?
Well, that era of going to the Ashley's house, it was the one time that our head of design was a man.
Right.
And he was amazing and he brought another level of creativity, I think, to the team. And he was quite... influential on my work personally and kind of really opened up my creativity. So that was, I've got really great memories of that time. So it was towards the end of my time there.
Yeah. What was his background?
So he was ex-Royal College and then he went to Max Mara and he designed Sport Max, that was it, in the early 90s. Yeah, that was his thing.
I remember Anne Tyrrell.
Yes, that's right. So Anne, he worked for Anne initially, as a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And then from Anne, he went to Max Mara.
Yeah.
And then they got him in to kind of come and revitalise Laura Ashley.
Right.
And my memory is that sort of, he was only with us for about a year, but it was a fabulous year, like really creative.
Yeah.
And all of us raised our game. And I think it was about having a head of design that believed in design.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we weren't to be beat. We weren't a group of people to be beaten down by buyers. We were creatives,
yeah.
And he really kind of fostered that in all of us. So really fantastic, and he loved the old kind of Laura Ashley aesthetic.
Yeah.
So that really sort of fitted with my feeling about the brand as well.
Yeah,
how can
yeah,
we
yeah.
relook at those early influences and repackage them, and you know, for that contemporary moment in the 90s, rather than trying to do what the rest of the high street was doing.
Yeah.
So he and I worked really, really well together, and I was his second in command, really.
Yeah.
When the year that he was there. And it was after that that I became, after he left, I became principal designer. So he went back to Max Mara in the end. Yeah.
And did you innovate, do you think, within Laura Ashley? When you think back on what you did,
yeah.
And what was your intention?
I think that we did innovate. Oh, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because for me, I didn't want the brand to become just like the other high street labels. And for me, the highest point in my time there was when someone, I think it was Nick said that it was what his mother would have been doing had she still been alive. And that to me was a wonderful thing. It's a mark of success. But I think that the buying team particularly wanted us to be like the rest of the high street and to be more fashionable and to be following the catwalk shows.
Right.
Whereas for me, it was always, we have to be aware of the catwalk shows, but our aesthetic is this.
Yeah.
You know, what is the contemporary version of that, you know, almost sort of Victorian look? But I used to love the 70s Laura Ashley with the little monoprints and,
the
pinafores and that kind of almost kind of less upper crust.
Because
Victoriana, if that makes sense. Because
it
was more peasanty, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
In the 70s. And I was particularly inspired by that. So I was the one that was trying to bring it back to that. But then what does that mean for a contemporary woman? How might the contemporary woman wear that?
Was it like a hippie intersection? With
yeah,
Ashley,
I think
70s?
So in the 70s.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. So that's the kind of Laura Ashley moment. But I also, when we spoke last time, we were talking about Englishness.
Yeah.
I dug out my mum's white gloves.
Oh, right.
We also talked about my parents.
Yeah.
And these are a pair of white gloves that my mum would wear in the 50s.
Yeah.
And so I often think of this idea of Englishness and pristineness and the colour white and this idea of white gloves. And I think within that there's also class implicated. So I always loved these white gloves of my mum's. So I thought I would share that with you today.
And it's interesting because, I mean, now you say it, it's like, it's just white.
This is like purity.
Yeah.
I know, isn't that funny?
Yeah.
And I didn't really notice until I went upstairs to get them and I thought, they're all, you know, they somehow they're kind of relating a bit to the white gloves, all this idea of purity.
Yeah.
Because nothing is pure, no culture is pure.
No.
But there is that kind of Victorian purity, puritanical almost, notion, isn't there, around Englishness.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And the kind of, like, the sort of consistency of just this white shirt with, like, it's reduced, but it's got, like, quite a lot of elaborate
detail.
But it's all washed out. The colour is gone.
Mm.
And but tell me more about these gloves. Like, how did your...
You know, there are lots of stories of kind of Jamaican migrants arriving in the 50s, the ladies in their kind of half-crown hats and their white gloves.
Yeah.
And it's this, like, you know, this touch of refinement.
Yeah.
And remembering that mum grew up in the countryside in Jamaica. So I always feel that the white gloves are part of this sort of staging of arrival. And it's how sort of, it's their perception of how English women dressed in the 50s. So it's sort of tied to that. So for me, when I look at them, on the one hand, it sort of speaks about my mum and that moment of migration, but also there's the Englishness that we spoke about last time that has kind of shaped my life and my career up to a certain point.
Yeah.
Well, I think even today, because a lot of what I do is still kind of troubling this idea of national identities and what are they anyway and what are the signifiers of them.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm.
But, I mean, with your mum, did she continue wearing them in Gloucester, or did she? Was it just an arrival thing? Or
it was continued, because there are photographs of her wearing it, but more wearing the gloves, but more for special occasions. Yeah. So if there's a wedding, she might sort of wear that with her suit. We had, and I don't have any of them, but we used to have kind of little nylon gloves that would go with, see-through gloves that would go with our party dresses.
Yeah.
So I think it's very much of that 1950s, 1960s era.
And what about the kind of mother and daughter? I mean, just because they're together on the table, you know, like the white gloves.
Well, we used to wear mother and child, because again, that's a real Laura Ashley thing, because I think the children's wear at one point was called Laura Ashley, mother and child.
Right.
And but I remember having there were moments where I had the same outfit as my mum. I remember a kind of a like a maroon coloured pleated skirt, and then it was like a tangerine little, probably nylon, little kind of jumper, kind of top with short sleeves, and she had this kind of mother version, I had the child's version.
Yeah.
So again, it's very much of that time, I guess.
But I'm thinking a little bit about the kind of... no, but it's this kind of weird coincidence and parallel.
Mm.
Because, like, what you said was that your mum had this idea of, like, Englishness, which was these white gloves, and then later you, as an adult and a designer, were researching these white shirts, their ruffs and their kind of ladylike. It's somehow it's like
to do with femininity and English. I think so, and I recognise that there are still elements of that in my life even now, because I still am drawn to these sort of white shirts and pin tucks, and I still love all of that, even though I don't design them anymore. And you know, working at Laura Ashley is a distant memory. So I think there is a connection for me, to this idea of Englishness and femininity, and there is something around class.
Yeah.
But but for me, particularly with the white shirts, I never iron them. I know they've just come out of a bag, but I never ironed them.
Right.
I would always just wear them rough, and I would wear them undone. I would never button them right up to the neck. Yeah, so there's something within me that is attracted to that, but I also want to rebel against it. I want to kind of, I want to sabotage that look. And it's interesting with the laces, because when you spoke to me before, and I didn't know I had them, or I'd totally forgotten I had them, but I have a bag of laces from my mum as well, so I don't know where... It's bizarre that I bring out these shirts today that I haven't thought about for 20 years, and then I have this bag of... but mum's laces are all a bit discoloured. I honestly had forgotten I had them, and then I discovered them. I think there are some white ones, but it's quite odd when you sort of... You know, it's all these funny little things.
Okay, like the trims.
Yeah, little funny lace trim.
That's so interesting.
That completely forgotten I had. It's interesting, isn't it? It's this whole...
It's almost identical. Well, it's not...
But it's similar, you know, and there's all these things.
Wow.
That I have.
And did your mum use these in like dressmaking?
Yeah, because mum, when she was in Jamaica, she used to do, interestingly actually, and I've not thought about this, but with my grandmother, mum's role was to decorate the dresses that my grandmother made. So mum, she spoke about embroidery, but when we were growing up, she did have a little sewing box that... There's all
these are beautiful. But these ones, are not from Jamaica?
No, they would have been from the UK, probably bought in Gloucester.
Absolutely lovely.
But I've got all of these funny things that I'd actually completely forgotten I had. All these... I haven't looked at them for literally years.
Newy.
Made in England. You know, and again, there's a lot of white, look.
Yeah.
Which is quite interesting. It's quite unexpected, because I think when we first spoke on the phone, and I was thinking about... Because I have had this like weird summer of starting this job, and everything, you know, I'm researching African culture and African textiles, and I keep thinking, well, where's my Caribbean-ness gone, you know? And, you know, how do I kind of fit? And then looking around my room and thinking, well, hang on, I've got these sort of African, inverted commas, textiles, and I have piles of these Dutch wax print and kente cloth, and then I think, well, who am I in all of this?
Yeah.
And I think that I'm as much about this strange notion of Englishness that's about femininity and lace and frills and pin tucks and white gloves. I'm as much that as I am, you know, a Madras check or a, you know, and I this little doll normally sits on my bed, and I find it really hilarious because it's Jamaica on the one side. You've seen these, haven't you? You turn them upside down, and I think she's Ghana. She's normally the Jamaica side up.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, she doesn't have. I thought she had another little apron, but she becomes another identity when you turn her up the other way.
But so I also really quite like that textile because it's kind of like postmodern.
It's a little bit kind of, it's a bit sort of 80s, isn't it? So it's obviously someone's made it from an offcut of something. But I think she's quite cute, you know, and so she sort of lives on my bed. So I see her every day, but she's normally the Jamaica side up. Because that Caribbean aspect of my identity feels really important. But I think it's the part of my identity that's often missing.
I mean, it's interesting because this to me is like a Pucci print,
isn't it? No, the fabrics are quite trendy, aren't they? How is that possible?
Like a Pucci
it's kind of quite stylish.
This is like, I don't know what. Who would have produced these kinds of prints in the 80s like this?
Yeah, because you did maybe see that kind of thing. Habitat. Yeah. It is a bit Habitat.
Like Habitat curtain or something.
Yeah, it is a bit like that. I know, she's a funny thing, but a friend sent her to me, and I absolutely love her, and let's say she's on the bed.
Was she made in Jamaica?
Well, maybe, because, you know, funny enough, another friend has one, and Tony has one, and he bought it in Ghana in, like, a tourist shop.
Right.
So I think it's some kind of a touristy thing, these dolls.
But do they sometimes have, like, an African country?
On the other side,
so that's the point of them.
Yeah, so you've got, so you might have one that says Africa on it, and mine, obviously, with Jamaica on it. Yeah. So I thought it was just handmade, so I thought I was the only person in the world with one. But oh no, I think they're like a sort of tourist thing.
Yeah.
But she's kind of really important, this little doll.
Yeah. Because?
Because I feel my Caribbean-ness gets lost, and so she's always the Jamaica side up, and it's almost kind of a reminder of who I am in a way.
But why does it, in what sense does the Caribbean-ness get lost?
I feel that maybe it's the nature of the Caribbean and maybe it's the nature of Jamaican culture because it's sort of, it's a combination, well everyone's, no one's culture is pure, but somehow in the Caribbean because the culture is, it's had to be Creolized and I think it's a positive thing. But I feel that sometimes when we look at blackness, for example, in a contemporary moment, I feel that there has been a swing towards the African continent in focus. If we think about visual art, where we had the black art movement and you had your kind of Sonia Boyces and your Keith Pipers and so on, and they're all Caribbean background.
Yeah.
Now I think the pendulum has swung and it's more of a focus on the African continent. And it's not a criticism, it's more a kind of observation.
Yeah.
And so I kind of feel, or it's African American. And so I kind of feel that in visual culture I'm not always able to find and see myself again, you know.
It's almost
as though as a Caribbean person, as Caribbean people, we had our moment in some ways.
In the 80s and 90s,
I guess.
Yeah.
And so, and starting this role where my focus is the African continent, again, I feel like Jamaica's slipping through my fingers sometimes. And so I really treasure the funny little embroidered Jamaica slogan on the doll somehow. Because it just reminds me of who I am and reminds me of my own work, which personally is more about the Caribbean.
Yeah.
So I like that. It's interesting.
It's interesting the sort of the kind of specificity of really particular migratory journeys and their textile component because, or any component, because I mean, I kind of wonder a little bit about the relationship to, for example, African American culture, which is just I just know this from Vandelay when he's Afro Brazilian, so that's a very particular culture. He's now black in Britain, but when he's doing his research around race and psychoanalysis, it's all African American. It's just like all African American.
Yes,
it's so rare to find anybody
here.
Bit in Brazil.
Yes,
and I'm just wondering about that. Maybe to say a bit more about that, if that rings true in terms of kind of minority within a minority.
Yes, I think so. I think particularly when I first started doing research, almost everything I was reading was African American.
Yeah.
And I think that's still the case now, but then for my era, you do have powerhouses like Carol Tulloch, for example, who all the African American scholars I come across now all go to look to her.
Yeah.
But there is an essence of the African Americans somehow have had a longer history of critique and a longer history of writing, and we have kind of the Harlem Renaissance moment. But somehow Caribbeanness is lost in that, because you know you've got Claude McKay from Jamaica, but he's sort of wrapped up in the whole kind of African American Harlem Renaissance thing. So it is like being a minority within a minority. And I sometimes feel that black Britishness gets consumed by African-Americanness somehow. And I think that for some people they are interchangeable, but they're not, because they're quite different experiences. Yeah. Maybe they're complementary. You know, maybe we're all part, we're coming from a similar root, but we've grown up with different experiences. But for some, they get kind of, you know, British, black Britishness gets conflated into African-Americanness somehow. All the visual symbols of blackness are actually African-American in origin.
It's interesting, sorry, I'm really free associating here, but I was just thinking about Beyoncé and...
The video piece,
But also Lemonade, you know, this video.
Is this the one with representing the 54 African countries? And it's been quite controversial.
But I was just thinking about... Well, Lemonade, I mean, Vandelay's been watching this other one, like, over and over again and giving me, like, reports. And I watched bits of it.
Yes.
But Lemonade, I watched the whole video. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of scenes where... And I think it's the same in this one, where she's basically in the kind of antebellum South, in these houses, dressed as kind of... slave owner in a way, you know, kind of occupying those spaces in obviously a very kind of empowered and aggressive way. And I don't want to like draw, but she's clearly like, we can also wear these things. We can. I don't know. I don't know what she's doing. I wouldn't want to presume to make a reading of it. But I'm wondering how you think about that in terms of dressing up and wearing the clothes of a former colonizing culture. It's a heavy question maybe, but what that does actually, you know, what are the kind of possibilities of that?
I mean, I haven't seen Lemonade, but I've sort of heard about it.
Yeah.
I think because I think we touched on this last time, that the dress of the enslaved was always this mixture of things, of hand-me-downs and, you know, things that they had customised themselves as well as what they were given each Christmas to wear. So I think there would always have been some kind of a mixture. I can see that it would be a really... I can see it's a political statement, rather like me dressing in these ruffle shirts in the way that I wanted to wear them. Because I think it does trouble... It troubles our assumptions around power and around class. I feel like I keep bringing up class in today's discussion, but it almost feels important to do that, because I think much like I'm saying there's a conflation that happens where black Britishness gets consumed by African-Americanness,
yeah.
I think that as a black woman or as black people, people see you as black first, and you cannot be a professor, or you cannot be a professional, you cannot be aristocratic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There is a kind of, you know, classes are not often spoken of, but I think that there is a kind of an association in Britain of blackness and working class or underclass.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there was that in the summer where... was it Edward Enninful that was stopped by a security guard at Condé Nast? He was stopped from going into Vogue House.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, of course, a black man cannot be working at Vogue. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's this weird thing, because I want to say the poor security guard was fired. But I feel that if I had been Edward Enninful in that position, I don't know whether I would have gotten the guy fired. I think I would have wanted to talk about, I cannot be seen as editor-in-chief of Vogue.
Yeah.
And it's a visual thing. It's that trigger where you're either a criminal. So the security guard stopped him. You know, yeah. I don't know whether he was fleeced, but
yeah.
You know, it's this idea that you're a criminal or you're a working class person. You're a criminal or a bus driver or something. You cannot be anything else.
Yeah.
So I can see where wearing these different costumes troubles our assumptions, and I think that that's part of the power of the Black Chronicles exhibition, for example, was that it did showcase black people wearing these aristocratic garments, wearing garments associated with professional people and stylish people that we're not used to seeing of that sort of era, because I think they're Edwardian, aren't they? I'd have to look it up, the dates for that. But I think that was the beauty of them and the power of them for everyone that saw them, is because they were so unexpected. So I haven't seen Lemonade, but I can see where there's a place for that to trouble people's assumptions. And I think it also says something about a long history, you know, because I think there is often this idea of, well, there's a kind of the idea of the repeating history, the repeating black history. But also, I remember my mum saying once that sometimes she feels as though she was hatched, because there didn't seem to be any record of her history, you know, which is really powerful, isn't it? It's really, really powerful. Yeah. And I think that's why my sense of lostness sometimes, if I can't connect or I can't see outward symbols of my Caribbeanness, it's... And I suspect that that's probably maybe not put in the powerful way that my mother put it, but I think that that's perhaps a common story for black people in diaspora, that you cannot somehow see a long history. I think that this idea of... It's a very long answer to your question.
That's a good one.
I think that this idea of what do those images do, I think they signal the long history. They trouble this notion of power. They raise the issue of class that we still live with and the conflation of... blackness to mean one thing, you know, class or working class, is African American.
Yeah,
it's something that happened over there rather than here.
Yeah.
So I think for me, all of those things are things that I think about when you describe that moment. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's interesting the kind of in maybe thinking about your own particular case, that fashion becomes a space to explore in a really interesting and complex way identity, the facets of yourself.
Yes.
You know, I don't know whether you can say something about that or whether I...
I think it does. I think fashion and textiles do allow you to play with the different aspects of yourself and to trouble people's expectations of you by the way that you dress, the different elements that come together to create whatever your aesthetic is. Because in a way, one of the things that I find really exciting, we might move away from this, but one of the things I find exciting is glancing at the table and the table is not a pile of Dutch wax gone because I'm, you know, vaguely African diaspora. So it feels deeply personal that it is this kind of weird mixture of things. But to me, that's the beauty and dynamism of the Caribbean, especially. You know, I remember when I was doing the PhD and someone said that someone described Jamaica as a landing strip because so many cultures arrive and then go off somewhere else, but they leave a trace, you know. And I think that this kind of strange mixture that we have on the table feels, I feel much more associated to this strange pile of unexpected things. White things and lace and white buttons and gloves and shirts. Than I do too, and I do have this pile of other textiles, but somehow I feel that if this project is about me, the personal me, I feel like I'm more wedded to this, like a more accurate picture of how I feel about myself inside this kind of strange mixture of things.
Because it's also new romantic.
Yes,
it's a new romantic moment.
It touches those things that we were talking about last time, the ruffles, you know, because again, I did have a ruffled shirt that I made, you know, and a ruffly skirt that I made when I was a new romantic, you know, and the shirt was white again. So it's, I feel like this is sort of this very interesting, this these connections and these observations.